The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hey, listen.
Mike, you know what this game that we're going to talk about today really made me start to think about? What is my favorite genre of film story?
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense. I was doing a wolf thing, a werewolf thing.
Yeah.
What's your favorite genre? Is it noir, sir?
I think it is. You know, because I really... Like this game, and also, frankly, just every noir story that's adapted in some way beyond the noirs we're used to seeing,
or even hybrid noirs, like Disco Elysium, I think got through to you because it's noir. I don't know that other point and clicks will necessarily get through to this old bear.
Yeah, but I there's just something about this genre that I think it has like a kind of eternal appeal for me. Like even Big Lebowski, right? Like a great comedy,
great noir.
But also. Really good noir film. Yeah, exactly. So I might be biased this time, Mike.
Okay.
I'm a little worried I'm biased just because I love noir so much.
You've never been biased on the show before.
I've been such an objective objective reviewer
just
this whole time.
This game had levels. It was navigable. Only neutral statements about the game.
That's right.
Can I also answer?
Oh, please. I want you to.
My favorite genre... I think noir is a subgenre, right? It's within the drama, or
dramas. No, yes, in the sense.
Where do you
yes,
call the line, right? Because the thing I'm going to say, I guess people will say, is a subgenre, not a genre. But like, so is Western a genre? I get what are genre? What's the genre level? Western,
good
action,
question.
Thriller. But then if you go drama, comedy, is that too broad? Now we're just talking.
It's very bland.
Like,
they get really bland. And also, I think things like Netflix and most of the streaming platforms are kind of obliterating the traditional genres in a good way. So, like, I would say just, you know, a film with a set of tropes and a tone is a genre.
Okay. Then the one I like that I think is really underrepresented is stuff like Marty with Ernest Borgnine or Inside Llewyn Davis, the more recent example. Stuff about how most people on the face of the earth will live unremarkable lives and not achieve their dreams. I think that's an important message we don't get enough, and I'm fascinated with it every time it crops up.
You mentioned two movies I haven't seen, but I know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Are those like rite of passage movies? Are they kind of a coming of age, but with an issue?
The issue is acceptance that you get what you get, you don't get what you thought you'd get. And I find we get that rarely because so many of the people who make it to the stage and spotlight to the point where they're telling these stories with a lot of money behind them and they reach our eyes and ears, their dreams did come true. So they tell the story of how if you work hard, your dreams will come true, which is totally a valid experience. But there's also an interesting experience that a lot of people have where you either never coalesce into a particular dream. Like, you know, I know people who never would say, I never really had a calling. I just work and enjoy life. And I don't know, man. And I'm like, that's good, too. You know, regular folks. True Stories is another movie that's like, a shrine to ordinary people. Ironically, ordinary people is not. But that subgenre.
I think ordinary people kind of is. Anyway, we could talk about this is not a movie podcast.
This episode because we're covering a Telltale game.
That's right.
Wolf Among Us, based on the Fables comics, which are also excellent. But we'll just be covering the game. This is one-upsmanship. You pieces of ship, which I said I would call them. Promise someone,
and they always appreciate
you filthy pieces of ship. Welcome, shipheads. Adam Ganser. I'm Michael Swaim.
That's him.
And it's A Wolf Among Us.
It is. This is a great game. It came out a while ago. There's a sequel promised. But if you haven't played this game, this Telltale game, I strongly recommend. And you're interested in it. Mm. I strongly recommend you play it before you listen to this episode because we'll be spoiling.
Oh
stuff.
Yeah, and it's so story forward that's why I said we kind of are covering a movie. I anticipate after we get through the mechanics, which are there and important and innovative and important to discuss, but simple, we will be talking more explicitly than usual about the story because it is a story of a game. That's what it is. You know, it's a presentation of story beats. Yeah.
It's the closest to the choose your own adventure format, which is sort of what Telltale became known for before they shuttered up. So, Mike, should we pass our first checkpoint and get into Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit? What do you think?
Sure. I'm just reading the end of Ordinary People. Beth is unresponsive after her suicide attempt, leading Calvin to emotionally confront her one last time.
Oh, see, now that's, you spoiled the movie, and we're sorry.
Okay, moving on.
Great movie, though, guys. Hey, seriously, you don't think you have to cut it. Ordinary People, you've had 40 years. I mean, like, you'll be fine.
It's Robert Redford's directorial debut, and he's dead now.
So there you go. He's not dead.
Didn't he? Oh, Paul Newman. I always mix him up with Paul Newman.
I love it.
How old is Robert Redford?
He's hanging on, 86, so you're not wrong for thinking it's possible. Okay. Yeah, he's definitely... it's a really
You knew that off the top
movie.
Of your head.
I did. It has Mary Tyler Moore in it, who also, I believe, has passed away, and she's awesome in that movie. Anyway, moving on to Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit.
Yeah, Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit, where we don't explain the plot of the 40-year-old Robert Redford film Ordinary People, but we do pass a checkpoint... Which in this case means we made a decision that will alter not only our life, but the lives of those around us. And we got a fun little stat spit out telling us how weird that choice was or how common it was.
Who else ruined their community's lives? You did.
That's
7%.
Right. Who else chose to do the bad thing? Almost everyone. Hey, humanity,
nice.
Huh?
Nice.
This is where we explain the game. If you've been missing all these brilliant references and in jokes and don't know what we're talking about, have never approached a Telltale game, this bud's for you. So do you want to take it, Adam? You want to explain?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Telltale and Wolf, go for it.
You bet. Yeah, so The Wolf Among Us is one of the earlier Telltale games. It came on the heels of the Walking Dead Telltale game, which we have covered the first season. There were several subsequent seasons to that. It was released in 2013 and 2014. Basically, it's the way it's described on Wikipedia tells you how hard this is to categorize, but you're essentially playing an interactive comic, which is to say you're watching a graphic mystery drama. You make key dialogue choices and also key action choices, but most of the game is watching a scripted story play out that you influence with key interludes. It's based on the Fables comic book series. I got to assume most of you probably know what that is. But if you don't, I'm just going to give a very brief summary of it. Fables is the story of all the old nursery rhyme characters that you remember from childhood and from a lot of Disney movies and stuff, but not Disney movies per se, but the stories they're taking from. Imagine if all those people made it out of their fantasy world into New York City in the 1980s and had to form a kind of fledgling community and figure out how to still be magical people with the powers they had in their fantasy world, but survive in New York with their new lives. And this story, Wolf Among Us, is a noir story in which some of these fables are being murdered for reasons we don't understand, and their fledgling government is struggling to address it properly and deal with the needs of the citizens because there is a little bit of classism going on in the government, it turns out. You play the character of Big Bad Wolf, who's called Bigby. He is in human form because one of the plot points of this story, of this franchise, frankly, is that all the people have to be glamored to look like normal people so that they can pass as regular humans in New York City. So Big Bad Wolf is sort of an old school 80s looking rough and tumble type who's become a detective, who's the sheriff basically of this little town, and is at war with the wolf part of him. And the part of him that's now moral, that has changed from being the Big Bad Wolf, a theme that gets explored throughout. And you're essentially tracking down why are we finding the severed heads of sex workers, and what does that mean, and sort of who is the person who is perpetrating that trade, and it uncovers a sort of larger conspiracy about the town, and that is, I think that's a good summary. Did I miss anything, Mike?
Maybe I zoned out because I was reading the middle part of Ordinary People, but did you? I feel like you didn't mention the mechanics in depth, other than to say they're similar to The Last of Us, right?
No, they're similar to The Walking Dead.
I mean, sorry,
Dead,
The Walking
Telltale.
Dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are basically identical. I think it's that Ordinary People.
Paul Newman's just alive. Robert Redford's dead. The Last of Us is The Walking Dead. But that you walk around, you solve simple puzzles by it's kind of a point and click, but without pointing and clicking because there's no cursor.
Right. Correct.
Pick stuff up, combine stuff with other stuff, make dialogue tree decisions, and then decide the big moral thing after you're done.
Yeah, the big choices,
which does fit surprisingly well with noir, right? Because that's what you do. You investigate, you gather the shit, and then you decide what to do. We'll get into stunning revelations like that and more in the next segment as we move into our gamer rants.
Yeah.
If I'm doing the math right, I'm the Robert Redford now. By which I mean I'm alive and I have opinions on this game.
Great.
And Telltale generally. Well, my first opinion, player one plugging in, gamer rant begin. My first opinion is that if you're at all intrigued, I mean, Adam said, stop down and play the game. I'd go a step further. Stop down and read the comic books. Have you read these comics,
Adam?
Yeah,
they're great.
Yeah,
I love them.
Bill Willingham deserves a shout out. Fables. There's this thing called public domain, and boy, howdy, a lot of storytellers sure try to bank off it because people like familiar characters and stories. And how can you get in on that racket? And, you know, you get stuff like Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, which we recently got a movie where Winnie the Pooh and Piglet go and murder people. It just like I'm saying, schlock to cash in on public domain shit. And then you got Fables. People who take legitimately cornerstone stories and turn them into this fabulous new, just through a new lens. And it is very much like, I don't think it's not a reinvention to the degree that this trick's never been done, because it's very much like the MCU in a way, right? Like each fable sort of has not necessarily powers that are totally analogous to superpowers, but they do each have their thing. And there's something fun about a collection of iconic things. And you can't get much more iconic than the fables that have all been amalgamated and passed down through the centuries. So it's immediately grabby. Noir fables. I was immediately intrigued. The comic turned out to be great, so I knew I was going to like the game. I already liked the Walking Dead games, and I don't give a shit as much about those comics or the idea of zombies generally. And I will say, just as my, because the rant's where we sort of share our emotional initial opinion, I loved it. Or I remember my first playing. I think it's my favorite. And that's tough because Walking Dead season one, you listen to that episode, it ends with truly one of the most impactful conceptual ways a game has ended for me, which is incredible considering that, and we'll get into this too. It's a medium to low budget, right? This is not The Last of Us. Speaking of The Walking Dead now, it's zombies on a budget, or at least in a cartoon sort of cel-shaded style. And it's fully relying on your ability to engage with it on an imagination level and imbibe the story and be interested in the story. And I think Walking Dead season one ends with, and it like a slam dunk in that department. And Wolf Among Us, beat by beat, story beat by story beat, there's elements that I think, like, I don't know why I necessarily have to compare Telltale versus Telltale, but I was for whatever reason. And I think The Wolf Among Us comes out ahead as my favorite Telltale thing there is. And I think every Telltale game is a proof of concept that this company should persist and this genre should persist. And I think they're masters of it. And it's pretty damn interesting to me. But if you've listened to the show a lot, you know I'm heavily story first. So I'm very interested to hear Adam's rant because a lot of story first games are able to grab me. And this is no exception. I think The Wolf Among Us is great. This time, digging through it with a more critical eye, I have a lot of interesting thoughts about where I think this genre could and should go next. If there's enough interest to propel it in those directions, because that's another thing. I know I'm in a minority because Telltale games always struggle to find an audience. Like, they don't sell like gangbusters or nothing. So I love it. I think it's great. Having played it now for the third time, I have some gripes with the story, but here's what's exciting, yeah. Y'all. They're on the level of gripes that I would have with a season of TV that's good. So, like, my gripes are like, well, I didn't necessarily buy this late Act 3 turn from this character because we've come to know them so well and I feel like they wouldn't do that. Usually my gripes with video game stories are like, that makes no sense. That doesn't mean anything. So, like, they're still operating at a very high level. But I am also equally interested in getting into the nitty-gritty because I think this genre actually has a lot of room to grow if it wants. I think Wolf Among Us is great, but I think we can do better, and that's my rant.
Great rant. Player 2, Adam Ganser, plugging in. Mm-hmm. I agree with a lot of what you said there, actually. I think that this is definitely my favorite Telltale. I'm not sure it's the best though. I really go back and think about Walking Dead season one sometimes. And I think the fundamental thing that makes this genre exciting is the idea that there are many possible outcomes and that, or that you have decisions that are really emotionally impactful that you're being forced to make essentially at gunpoint because of the timing thing. And I would say this game doesn't have that in the same way that The Walking Dead one does. The Walking Dead first season felt a lot more, like the stakes felt higher with the choices you make than they do in this game. That said, everything else about this game is just better. I think the story's more interesting. I think the characters are more interesting. I think the dilemmas that they're getting into are more interesting. I got really interested this time, which was my third time as well, in the sort of the outcast culture here in this world. Like, I got really interested in what happens with Grendel and Holly and to a lesser degree, even Georgie, you know, like some mm-hmm. of these characters who are sort of, they are a little less well-known fables, which is why they're Georgie kind of Porgy, in a, yeah.
Well, the Jersey yeah, Devil, Porgy. It also includes like urban right. legends like the Jersey Devil.
Correct. Which is great. And that of course is the reason that they are living in a sort of this outcast version of this culture is because they're not as well remembered and therefore they don't have the same access to resources, a theme in the story. And so I think both, I love that continuity and that idea. And I also thought that like the moral quandaries that you face as a sheriff about how to be the sheriff, like when to be the bad wolf, when to be the good cop, they mattered in this story. Like they really impacted those characters in particular. I also think like this thing was going to be a home run no matter what, because I think Fables is just an awesome idea. Like, I love what you said about the public domain. I would say Fables is the proof that we need public domain to be what it is. Like, Fables shows the importance of public domain because it shows there is other ways to make these characters and this storyline interesting in the hands of other artists. Like, we have no idea what somebody could do with Mickey Mouse if Mickey Mouse would ever finally fall into public domain. Or, you know, insert your favorite characters here. We don't know. And I think it would be interesting to know. You know, I don't think that they're all going to be winners. But, you know, if we get a Fables version of, you know, the Marvel Universe or whatever, I might really dig that. You know, so that part I think is really cool. I love that they're doing something with that. The noir story is like, ultimately, this is the story of a community learning how to police itself and how to run a town with some dignity in light of the fact that they're not all equal, you know, which is a story that I liked on television when it was Deadwood. And I've liked it in movies when they've made movies about that. So it's a great story. And all I can say is that I don't know for sure that it is maximizing the... It's not maximizing the thing I want in a game, which is catharsis through my choices. But hey, man, if you just want to play a great story and that's not, you know, and you're willing to overlook that thing, I think it's pretty fucking great. And that is my rant.
Bingo, bango. Yeah, I think before we hit the break, just because it'll fly out of my head, I think you're so spot on about, and I think it's part of the natural life cycle of art, right? Is, you're like, if you're listening to this and wondering, well, who cares what you do with Mickey Mouse? Or like, what is that? And I would say, well, the importance is once something becomes that iconic and that much of a cultural touchstone for all of us, or so many of us all over the world for so long, it's charged with so much power, symbolic, emotional,
right,
cultural power, that you want to give that to new artists. You want to hand that Excalibur to them and let them run with it versus, no, we own that and it's always what it is and it can never grow because it's our money cow. So you just go make something else. And it's like being able to do that with Fables, I think, buys you so much backstory and immediate emotional connection, because you're like, you know the relationship between the woodsman and the big bad wolf.
Right, you know exactly. It, you know,
before
that
you even hear, right, the first word of dialogue from them. You're already, right, working on like ground that we all own already. Go ahead.
And that's,
sorry,
a fun idea. No, not at all. You're absolutely right. That's a fun way to do it. There's another way to do it that we've all seen recently. The movie The Green Knight. So The Green Knight is repurposing a story that is also, by the way, sort of a fable based on Arthur, the Arthurian legends, right? And that story, it doesn't have a lot of cultural cachet to us now, other than it's sort of, you know, there's a reference to characters that we have some emotional interest in.
Most folks have heard of it in passing, but they don't know, yeah, the story beats. Yeah.
But the fact that an artist can go back and then revisit what that story is and recontextualize it for us to put it in, to see those cultures in new terms, I think you can see the value of that way of doing public domain too. So, you know, and I can't get into Sir Gawain and the Green Knight in some detail here. I would, yeah, if I could, but I think that's just another way. There's so many ways the public domain can create great stories. You know, anyway, we could spend all day on that. Let's not do that. How about instead we finish chapter one of this story, find out whether 80% or less of our listeners agreed with us, and get some commercials under our belt. And when we come back, we'll start chapter two. What do you think?
Turn the page.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun. Such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Ah, always good to come back after a Bob Seger reference.
You love that 70s rock, dude. Like I don't think people know how much you love it. Like, I didn't know how much
I
you
love it. Oh, I don't love Bob Seger. For the record, I do not love Bob Seger.
But
don't you put
but
that
for the
on
record.
Me.
Okay, fair enough. But for the record, Swaim loves that old garage rock and stuff. Like, we took a little road trip together to record a one-upsmanship, as I recall. And you brought up like all these old rock bands. I was like, bro, I had no idea listened to all this stuff. You know, it's just warm my heart, and I love that it comes out of you sometimes.
All that stuff. All right. But I do want to harken back to before the break something about the story that I think we were dancing around, which is that I think it's objectively the best Telltale. I think there's lines in it where you're like, well, that's well written. That's well written. I don't know if they lifted that directly from the comic, but that's very good. But there is a lack of emotional catharsis. Not a lack. There's some of it. But there's something about the fact that they are magical creatures versus in The Walking Dead, they're recognizable humans dying, that is just emotionally more primal. Like, when, you know, in this, when there were the major emotional payoff turns, I never got the full amount of catharsis I got from The Walking Dead, but I really think it boils down to, well, that's a story where you're invited to imagine getting eaten alive.
Right.
It's just, it just is more primally impactful than thinking about, what if an immortal wolf fought a woman who could manifest through shards of mirror? And it's like, that's interesting. It's not primally true, but it's cool.
I agree. Yeah. So I think my biggest observation I wanted to make, and I think it's germane here, is like, what's the hook of this versus the hook of Walking Dead? And I think you just sort of circled it. Like, the hook of Walking Dead is that decisions are life or death, and that when you make a decision, somebody's probably going to die because of it later on in ways you can't predict. And they keep doing that, right?
Right.
The hook of this game is not so much how your choices impact the community. That's really more the narrative device of it.
Mm-hmm.
The hook of it is seeing how they repurpose fables who you have expectations and memories of into this story.
Like, the hook is actually seeing, oh, what is the Mr. Toad up to? Oh, that's how they're handling
that's who
Mr.
He
Toad.
Is here.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I think, and there was a couple really key characters that, if you don't mind, I just want to go through and show how they undermine our expectations. They all do, by the way. But okay, so here's a few that I think really took off for me. Ichabod Crane in this story is really well adapted because he's not a character we loved. Right, but he's sort of a reluctant,
he's a
cowardly
famous coward.
Hero.
But in this, but now he's a very specific kind of coward now.
Yes,
which is
who becomes
very interesting. Yeah.
A sexual deviant, and so they use our expectations and then run with it in a way that's like, oh, of course, you know. And it feels very satisfying to see how well they understood both the narrative and also that character. Snow White, I think, also, who is a huge part of fables in general. She's like, the in some ways, the main character, her and Bigby. Snow White has a great sort of subtle, like, slow burn role in this story, and that is that she has to sort of step out from being second fiddle and actually take control of the government. And is, I think she's still sort of shaking off people's perception of her, a thing that she's used to dealing with because she was always Snow White. You know, like, right. She's used to being goody two-shoes. She feels like she has to walk the line of being goody two-shoes, and yet she has to get her hands dirty in this story because that's what a noir story is. And I think it's really well realized in this way. And the last one I want to mention, we could go through literally every character, but I think my favorite, though, is the Little Mermaid. Nerissa the Little Mermaid. Now, most of us, when we think Little Mermaid, we have Ariel in our brain and think, you know, like, oh, yeah, I know exactly who that is. So they kind of throw that out. But I think they also do know that we think the Little Mermaid is a happier tale than it is. You know, the actual
one. Well, she gives up her voice, so they are still playing off the Disney version of Little Mermaid.
They know the Disney version. And the cool thing about this is she, like, this is a world where everything is bad for her. Like, she's, you know, she is a sex worker. Her life is in danger. She's not allowed to admit to what's going on because of a magic curse to the sheriff, and she plays sort of a key underhanded role that's awesome. And I don't want to spoil everything. But I just think, again, all three of those are great examples of they knew what we thought it was going to be and played against it. And that's why we love it so much. Right. I mean, is that how you feel about it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm compelled to mention too.
Please.
Grendel, who is traditionally the unstoppable killing machine that Beowulf has to tackle, sometimes literally a dragon, but often, or at least I was taught in English class growing up, that it's not that it's just some kind of unthinkable monster. I thought they really did a good job, A, on the design of Grendel, which the comic, of course, alley-ooped, but Grendel looks cool, but also that Grendel is like this streetwise, pretty pipsqueak-looking
hard case. He's a hard case
gutter punk, but who's extremely loyal to the other people in the gutter.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to me. I don't mean like, because I'm going to ask at the end of this blurb, but I think it's interesting when they take a fable, and really I should keep mentioning Bill Willingham takes a fable like Georgie Porgy, where it's literally just a spinoff of, that is a nonsense rhyme. Someone just slammed words together that rhyme. But he took the line, he latched onto the line, kiss the girls and make them cry, and was like, this guy is a fucking evil, exploitative strip, what do you call it? I never go to them. Strip joint owner.
Yeah, strip club. Yeah.
Strip club owner. And that's so perfect to me that just spun off of, well, Joe, what is the only thing we know about him? He kisses the girls and makes them cry. And now he's like so perfect for a noir. He's the asshole guy who runs a strip club who's just an unremitting piece of shit. Won't ever cooperate. And I also wanted to mention that much like Terry Pratchett's Discworld, what's another great thing Fables does if you read the comic series is it's a noir because Bigby is the main character. Does that make sense?
It can operate
in any genre, which is super dope. Like there's other ones where you visit the farm and it's like it's a more upbeat action adventure because of the characters involved. So like this one very particularly is a noir because it's Bigby and because we're following Bigby around. So my question was, and I think this
will lead
to probably a huge chunk of conversation about our decision, because that's also what's fun about these games, right? Is comparing your decisions. I wanted to ask where you were on the bad cop, good cop axis, and specifically about Georgie. Yep. Did you kill the fuck out of Georgie? Because I killed the fuck out
this time. I did. I didn't the first couple of times. For whatever reason,
fuck that
I think
fucking slaver. Like that's he's a bad dude. He's a really sex trafficker. He's a monster. Yeah,
he's a bad dude. And also, he's like the way that the plot lays out. He very clearly expected to get away with it.
Yeah.
Because of like political protection, which makes him worse. You know what I mean? Like he's as bad as it gets here. And yet I think that they were smart for picking a nursery rhyme we all kind of remember to be that character because I think you don't rush to kill him when you feel like you know exactly who he is. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like some of these people, like I feel like Grendel's a little bit more of an obscure reference, even though Beowulf is obviously very significant. Like he didn't immediately trigger like, oh yeah, from Beowulf. Whereas Georgie Porgy, I think I know who that is. And it was like, so I was less willing to just like kill him right away. Right. So I did a few playthroughs where I didn't. This time, though, I was like, you know what, man? Nah. And in answer to your other question, was I evil or good? I try to, after I've played the game once, do a bad boy run. Because the game is clearly, all these games are designed to give you a bad boy run that's supposed to be satisfying. Right. So I tried to be it, but like, I didn't like it. And more than that, it just became really clear how much you're oppressing that community. That's Grendel and Holly and the Jersey Devil, it's not good.
As Adam said, the core question before the community is, well, we're not like the normal humans. They haven't an established, I mean, it sucks, but they haven't an established legal system. Cops do this, judges do this, blah, blah, blah. We have a magic well we can throw into people that dissolves their soul. Like, what is justice to us? What is fair? What is unfair? And then they layer onto that, which I do think you need that layer of complication to make it a solid noir. And they know that. They layer onto that. Yeah, and the poor fables are treated worse than the rich fables.
That's
what the
right.
fuck? How is that justice? And
that's
so the story tries to tackle both at once. What is justice for a horrible crime? But also, what is societal equality? And the fables are trying to build this from scratch in a new alien world. Those are great. Classic noir. There's Chinatown shit in here, too. It knows what it's about.
Absolutely. And it does it all well, I would say. Like, it does all those pieces well. You know?
I agree on the story level, but I did want to talk about, so like, I was bad, kind of bad. I was conflicted on my first run. I was conflicted. Bigby, who was very, I would say,
that's surprising to me.
Sometimes good, sometimes bad, really unpredictable. This time I played as Bigby, who was very quiet. And so another thing that I never did the first run was choose the silent option, because you can choose the silent option.
Yep.
And I gotta say, when I thought of the story more from a, I'm helping collaborate to craft this story like a screenwriter would, mm-hmm. I actually loved the silent option, because instead of just, I used to think of it as abdicating my decision-making, and that's not the point of the game. This time I thought of it as, no, I'm choosing for the movie I'm watching to be very written at the top of your intelligence. This can play in subtext. We don't need this line. I'm cutting this line.
It's just going
to be silent here. And I loved that feeling.
I like that so much. Just very brief aside, if you want to have the funniest Telltale experience I've ever had, do only silent option and play the Batman one. Because boy, it gets real funny. I've done that and it's really good. Anyway, no, I do. I think the silent option is more viable in this game. Then, like, I don't like in Walking Dead, it feels very sullen, you know, like,
right.
like and combative. But here, it feels more calculated, because the game is more calculated, and so
because he's a detective, you feel like, well, he can be thinking shit, as a detective might. But I do find, and I don't know. I mean, we can keep praising, talk about whatever you want, obviously. But I'm just gonna turn to say, like, so being that scrupulously good this time. I noticed some little threads, fraying of the threads and seams at the edges, only in the sense that, like,
great.
Like, I was scrupulously good and respectful and very supportive, but not patronizing to Snow. And then there's a scene where no matter what you say, it's just, it's not a choice. It's hardwired into the story. She says, well, of course you'd do that. You like it when things go wrong.
Right.
It just gives you an excuse to be the big bad wolf again. And I was like, hey, screenwriter. I've been scrupulously never even approaching turning into the big bad wolf. I've been incredibly law and order by the book. The story should have accommodated that. And I know that that's almost an impossible ask, because what I'm getting at is when you have so many lines of dialogue and you have all these different paths, it does feel like after three playthroughs, at least, you can see the smoke and mirrors and they are really there. The walls are there, right? Like,
yeah,
it bothered me this time realizing that there's a, for example, a classic decision in this game. There's a lead at a butcher shop and there's a lead at another place. I forget, like a bank or whatever. Which one do you want to go to? You only have time to go to one.
Yeah, they do that at the end of several chapters.
They do this at the end of several chapters.
Yeah.
It can be two people are running away. It can be two objects are, you can only get one. But in this, the example I'm using, right? You're a detective. You have to use your time wisely. Which place do you go to? And you go to one and you do stuff. And then you realize you do have enough time and you go to the other one, and you, even though the key, like the heat of the moment has passed, like you reach, you arrive
still get
there,
everything.
You still get all the same information, learn the same things, and are funneled to the same place to interact yet again. And even much like a TV show, it constantly is reusing locations and sets to save budget. To the point where I'm like, okay, but the true promise of this genre, wouldn't it be, would be a story where by the end, I could have an alcoholic Bigby who never solves the case, or I could have a by-the-book Bigby who's a hero, or I could have Bigby disappear and start a new life somewhere else. Like, I know what I'm asking for is impossible, but I want it. I want the
you want the actual choose
where
your own
the
adventure.
Endings are radically different.
Yes.
Where it really matters.
So I would say there are other games that are closer to that than Telltale. Like I would say the Detroit Become Human is closer to that, and some of those, the Until Dawn people.
You did Quarry, like right?
The Quarry.
Was it in terms of different endings? Were they very different?
I only played it once. Like you could, like, again, they structure those games around how many of your party is going to survive. Like Until Dawn and The Quarry, which, you know, maybe we'll cover one of those one day. I don't know. But those games are structured around, like, how many people can you keep alive? So in that way, there's a lot of variety, right? But, like, there's no version of it where, like, it never breaks the mold the way that you all want it to be. You know what I mean? Like that, because they can't. They can't. But they're better about delivering that than this game.
But I don't see why you can't. I feel like if you had the budget,
well, just
you
money.
Actually could.
Yeah,
it's just more
money.
Time and money and voice acting. But
like this game,
Chrono Trigger has wildly different, and you know, and that's 35 years ago or whatever.
I mean, Cyberpunk also has very dramatically different endings. But like all the pieces, but there's a lot more money invested in that. But all the main set pieces still are the main set pieces. Like, what you really want is, like, for the decision tree to get wildly different, like, even in the first act, so that you're like, oh, I had a totally different story than the first story. And that's just not really possible. And not what, certainly not
doesn't
for this
stop
game.
Me from wanting, because it's so, I can imagine it so easily. And I don't mean that there's 1,000 endings or any, but I mean, like you said, what if it was, and this is such a, what if it was, so the amount of content that this game is, what if we had 7 times that amount, so that when you played it, you could be like, oh man, I'm going to have to play this at least 3 or 4 times to see roughly 80% of it. That would, I don't know. I just want that really bad, but that doesn't knock like,
what's
this
good
is
about
an amazing,
this?
Right. Yeah. And I really like this genre of game. I'm just saying, I wish this genre of game was more popular and more funded, because I actually think we could take this genre further with more resources.
I agree with that. I also think that what you're asking for still fits in what would be considered a reasonable version of this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's some, it's like, it should be infinite, permutate. Like, you know, it's like, nah, man, that's not
I want
possible.
An open world procedurally generated game that's story driven.
And it's
like, that's not
good
really
luck.
Possible.
That'll be bad. Did you see No Man's Sky? The story will be like those dinosaurs, bro. So that's not possible. But I think what you're asking for is the promise of this genre, and we've never totally done it.
Not
you know
totally,
because
I mean?
Like, we've never really
something
done
that's brave about this one is it. You're right that almost always the choice, the way you know you made a good or bad choice, is whether someone in the cast lives or dies. I did like that in this game, the good or bad choice was like, well, here's now the reality that exists because of that choice. And you just had to personally decide if you were satisfied or dissatisfied with how things shook out. But for the most part, other than the ending, it was not a death. It was like a permutation of the, or you lost or gained someone's respect. You know, like,
mostly
I like
you're playing
that
for
we
that.
Were playing with those stakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do have to ask, this run at least.
Sure.
What do you think the Fables justice system should be? Meaning,
ooh, good question.
As of course you do. By the end of this, and we're getting away, we're closing in on getting to the end of the episode without spoiling too much, which I'm pleased by, so I'm actually going to try to be a little circumspect. But like most noir, you uncover a vast conspiracy. The person you first think might have done it didn't do it. You finally find out who did it. You do get your man. You have the guilty person there. You've assembled enough evidence. There's a trial. Nerissa even confirms, like, boom, you got him dead to rights, red-handed. You're in the power position. What'd you do? Did you throw him down the well and burn his soul? Or did you let him go? Or did you? There's like five options.
Well, you've asked me two questions, and so I'm going to answer them both because I think they're both really good. I've done everything there is to do to the villain of this story.
Just to see the end.
Just to see. Sure. I didn't think any of them felt unjust. Other than there's one that feels unjust, but it's not unjust to him. It's unjust to your character.
Or it sets a bad precedent for Fable Town.
Correct. Yeah. But not that it's bad. Like I feel like any punishment is reasonable to the character at the end.
Yeah.
What should the government be? So what that's a big question.
You're right. Those are two questions, but they're intertwined. Yeah.
Because that's what they're sort of asking you to decide at the end, although they came at it in sort of a backwards way. So, like, to answer that, I want to actually voice one of my big gripes. I think the character of Bluebeard really displaces
he's the Blue Harry
here.
I totally thought he did it. I remember the first run. I was like,
but
clearly
also,
he did it. Yeah.
He's too powerful. Like, he becomes a problem for this narrative, I would say, if you really think about it.
And if you haven't played, his thing is he has infinite money.
Right, and so he has infinite influence, because everything here is sort of a handshake deal. Like, they have no constitution, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't even seem like they really have elected office. You know, like, they're kind of, like, everyone's sort of doing this out of obligation in some way, or because everyone's like, yeah, fine, you do it. It's just not clear. Like, I didn't get the sense there was elections and stuff. Maybe there are. And that wouldn't ruin anything I've thought about it so far. He's a little too powerful. I think any system of government needs to eliminate dudes like that from being able to barge in the mayor's office and do whatever they want to do. Because that's he's really not that different than the person that you end up sort of executing whatever punishment you decide is just. Like, they're kind of the same.
Do you buy any level of the argument the villain makes at the end, which is sort of from A Few Good Men? It's the "you want me on that wall" speech.
Dude, I just showed that to my students yesterday.
Oh yeah. Do you buy the argument even a little bit that he is helping the lower class fables by creating some stability for them through his organized
That can't
crime?
Be untrue. That probably isn't untrue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's definitely from a certain point of view, right? Like, it's definitely that. But, like, it's not a set of facts that are complete nonsense. Just like Colonel Jessup in A Few Good Men isn't wrong that we don't want, like, we need somebody up to defend the country, that we don't want to have to deal with that person. You know, like, he's right about that. That's part of what makes him compelling, that he has a point of view that's like, that's true.
And noir is supposed to be gray, right?
Yeah.
And I think they successfully do that. Like Tweedledee and Tweedledum, I feel like they're successfully gray.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I hate them. Sometimes I'm like, I guess they are all right. You know, I guess I don't know.
There's
most
a lot
of the characters
of people
fall
like that
in that area.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the point of it. I think that's the point of the story, ultimately, is like, sort of stripping off their binary shine and putting them on a spectrum where they all, like, you have pity for all of them. I have pity for the woodsman, who's an objective son of
a
bitch.
But he has a rough life.
I mean,
both are true.
Yeah, he does.
He has
a
rough life, but you can't do that to people.
That's right.
At the same time.
That's
right.
You know, like, I kind of didn't like Toad, even though Toad has every reason to be the way he is. You know, like, yeah.
Did
like,
you let Colin go back? Did you cut your friend's brakes? That's another moral question to ask. At the end, Toad is, legally speaking, fucked. The end.
Yeah,
Toad is
he's
fucked.
Yeah.
Now, you have this pig friend who you kind of really like. He's like your roommate.
Yeah.
He's also fucked, but you could just fudge it if you want. You are the sheriff. That's such a great moral quandary to put before someone.
It's also perfect because you are part of the reason his life is bad, because you're the big bad wolf.
It would make it up to him.
Yes, it would make it up to him.
The guilt you have. Right, but it's illegal, and you just told Toad he couldn't
do it.
It's
so good.
Yeah. It's a really good setup.
They really do have like five or six great setups. That's
one
of them.
Where you really feel like, ooh, I can't make this decision.
Yeah. I think the Beauty and the Beast setup is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, it's interesting enough that I don't want to say much. Like, it kind of, I think, rightly takes them both down a peg. And I think that is good. Not because like,
oh yeah, when
them.
They finally, when you finally interview them in their apartment, it yes. changes your perspective. Yes. On it. So correct. Interesting. Yeah.
It just rounds them out. Everybody gets rounded out a little bit, which that's my favorite thing about noir stories is like, it's a place where in some ways we're being more honest than we are in other genres. Like, yeah, people are a mix of good and evil. Like all of them are, you know, like all of us are. That's it. That's the deal. And noir doesn't shy away from that. That's what makes it so good. Yeah, so yes, I guess I do.
I did find it interesting, and I think it does speak to something, or I don't know if, but telling that if you time out, because you have to make decisions in a certain amount of time. I'll just say this. At the end, when you're making the final decision of what should justice be for the guilty party in this case, if you choose the silent option or time out, capital punishment is the default choice. I think that's an interesting choice by the developers.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't have to be, but they kind of fudge it in a way that's very classic to movies and shows where it's like, well, the villain lunged at me, so I had to kill him. You know what I mean? They play that old trick. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we can have an interesting conversation about morality to me means the story's operating at the level it needs to operate.
Absolutely.
At. Like that I genuinely felt bad about, you know, causing a ruckus at that one funeral that happens.
Right.
You're like,
that's
oh,
so
no,
bad.
Not this now. I'm bringing my shit into the community.
Yeah.
You really care about the community, and they characterize the community really well.
That's right. They all, again, there's a few other like well-placed fables that are there to round out how you feel about stuff. Like to answer your other question of like, is the villain of the story helping the community? Like the best case you can make for that is he's employing Tiny Tim, right?
Right.
Like Tiny Tim is a sweet guy.
Well, that's why Tiny Tim is there.
That's why he's there. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just a lot of it's very smart. It's well written. It's very smart. And it's enjoyable. I just like one or two little gripes and then maybe we'll take a break.
I have little things and then that's
okay. Great.
The time. Go for
great.
It.
So I think the character of Bufkin. Is we spend a lot of time with
that's
Bufkin.
The flying yes. monkey from the Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time on some of the wrong characters and he's the best example of that. But there's some others that it's like, I think you like, you know, I get that you have to write a story. And so we have to get hooked into some stuff we don't care about. Bufkin in particular, and really all those meaningless chore things that are about ultimately getting the one piece of information, but it feels like padding that stuff. Is I think not good, and every Telltale game has some of it, and I think they shouldn't be afraid of like it being a little shorter to just get on with the story. Like I have never played a section of a Telltale game where wandering around the room to get the one clue was the most fun thing I could do. You know, like I always find that frustrating, and all that stuff happens to coincide with time you have to spend interviewing the Magic Mirror and Bufkin, and I found that stuff boring. Did you disagree with that?
It's interesting that I love point-and-click adventure games, but Telltale games are trying to be even simpler than that. Like, the puzzle solving is not complex. It's almost as if they're self-conscious about the fact that, well, it's still a video game. You got to do something that's not so it feels like a game. And I would actually argue, I don't know that you do.
You don't need to do
that. Because you're right.
I agree.
It feels like a needlessly gamified portion of the thing that slows the story down just so you can be like, well, it's still a game. I picked a thing up and I plugged it into another thing. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I think just go all in the sense that, like, one of the last things I wanted to mention that we've hardly brought up is how much it's trying to be a TV show.
Yeah,
there are
definitely.
Procedurally generated previously on Wolf Among Us
montages
unique to your playthrough, which I do think is a really cool idea. Each chapter, right? Previously, this you did this, remember? And all that stuff is so cool. I know I heard interviews at the time, and I know Telltale's model at some point was, and Sam and Max point-and-click games that persist to this day do this as well. There was this idea that there could one day be this thing where you could have video games that were like TV shows or like collecting comics, right? Where every month one comes out and it's a new chunk of story and it's like a TV series, but it's a video game. I really want that. I think that's really cool. So far, the attempts to do that have sputtered out or in some way been like, all right, we can't do it every month. Or in this case, well, our company's out of business. We got five out, but that's it.
Right.
And I know Telltale still exists, but it was purchased by completely other people. It's a new company. They are supposedly working on A Wolf Among Us 2, which is very exciting.
It was supposed to come out in 2018, by the way.
But this is my point, is we had this dream of monthly installments of Fable games, and clearly we're not up to that task. But I do think that's such a cool idea, and the idea of skinning a game as a TV show. And if you are going to do that, stop worrying about it being a game. It's not. It's a story thing. I don't care what it is. It's a visual novel, I suppose.
I guess this team hasn't shown that they are adept at making gamified stuff as fun as it needs to be.
The game parts are not good enough game.
Yeah. Like, and I don't mean that, like, who am I? I'm not around, like, judging their capacity. But like, when somebody like Rockstar decides we're going to add more tedium to the game and gamify things that you didn't used to have to do, they've proven to me with games like Red Dead 2, they know what they're doing, and they know how to make it interesting and entertaining and create an experience with that. So far, I haven't seen that in Telltale, even in the best versions of it, which I would include this game in.
Last thing I'll say, I'd also love an addition where there's many, many dead ends and false stops, which I bet most people would find frustrating.
Yeah.
But I wanted to have a lot of decisions where they're like, well, you never solved the case and this was the rest of your life. And I'm like, fuck, gotta start over.
Right.
Like, I think, but maybe that comes from my history of actually reading Choose Your Own Adventure stories. As you said, those books were
good
for me. They had, and a main thing about them is you died constantly, or not just died, but failed. There were lots of dead ends and false starts and shit. And I thought that actually added to the feeling that this was, you know, that there's infinite story possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why a game designer would be afraid of doing that, because there would be a percentage of game players who would be like, "What the fuck, man? I just want to beat the game." You know what I mean? I might be that guy. You know, like, I understand, but I think you're right that there is something good about a game over screen in a game like this, which is what that is, like an ending that's basically the game over screen. Because it makes the stakes of the game go higher. Like, oh, I can fail at this game.
Oh, I can do the story wrong.
Yes, I can do it wrong.
That's the game. Not pick that thing up and combine it with that thing. I think that's the wrong kind of gameplay to merge with this.
Yeah, the idea of failing one of these games is interesting to me.
For example,
they should do that.
A very common occurrence in this is you can lie to characters. And it's very cool that they'll remember that you lied to them, and they sometimes catch you and realize, oh, you lied to me earlier. But the quote unquote punishment to the player is that they make a snide comment about how you disappointed them.
That's it.
Then they go on to say or do whatever they were going to do in the scene anyway. Like, that does not deviate.
There's really
so I'm like, what if you lied to Colin? And then Colin was like, fuck you. And then he wasn't in the story anymore. Yeah. And it affected everything. Like, that would be cool.
Yeah. There's only like two or three relationships that are significant enough that getting a snide look affects how you feel about the game.
Right.
And Colin is one of them. I mean, Snow White's another. And I would say that cabal of Grendel, Holly, like mostly Holly, like those guys. But the rest of
them
are
able
like,
to make you feel guilt.
Yeah. The rest of them, it's like, I don't care about you, Greenleaf. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not concerned, Beast. I'm not worried about you, Beast.
I'll burn your tree or I won't burn your tree.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck your tree.
I don't care about your fate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll huff and puff your whole fucking existence, bro. I'll do it. By the way, I just love that they brought back the huffing and puffing thing. Cause like, it's like a weird thing from the story.
Well, at the climax, you're like, what is he going to do? What's the final form of Big Bad Wolf? And you're like, well, it's blowing. Remember the story? It's blowing
and
shit.
And it's awesome.
That's what he does.
Yeah, it's really awesome. It's great. Also, they have like a whole mythology for that built out in Fables that I also really like, but it has nothing to do with this. So just dropping that for those of you who are Fables fans. I think it's time, sir, that we close the chapter on this and decide, do we throw this game down a well? Or keep it alive for the aliens. Sound good?
That's a fable. Are you able to take a quick break?
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills.
I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun. Such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
I wanted you to keep singing that song.
Do you know that song? Hello, Mabel, are you able to come out today?
I don't know. I don't.
No, it's like the kind of song you would sing at an ice cream social while you ride a bike with a big wheel.
Built for two. Yeah.
Hello,
exactly.
Mabel.
Wearing a lot of pinstripes. Yeah,
this is the final bow, at least for this episode of One Ups. We pass another checkpoint.
Yes, we do.
And we enter Keep or Delete, where we decide whether the game under review makes it onto a celestial hard drive, which can only hold 100 games, will one day be shown to the aliens from the Spielberg movie AI, and they will judge us based on that. So,
great.
How do you want to tackle this?
Good question.
Iceberg? just any image. I'm just grabbing for any image.
Yeah.
I'll tackle this toucan.
I think I want you to go first this time.
Okay, I'll do my little spiel.
I'm a little bit unclear, honestly. I don't know for sure what I want to vote on this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, something I am going to do is go to our handy-dandy one-ups, keep or delete.
Yep. Where you will realize that we did keep... Walking Dead, or the Telltale Walking Dead.
Oh, you already know this. The Walking Dead season one is on the drive.
Yes.
I'm surely convinced that I made that decision based on the powerful, powerful ending of Walking Dead season
Absolutely.
One. That's got to be why. Oh, although it says overridden. Did we override?
I said no. And then,
Okay.
And we brought it on.
Looking at the stats,
yeah.
Initial review of Walking Dead season one, Michael kept, Adam deleted.
Yeah.
Then on March 22nd of this year, we had an episode where we got to nominate and override prior decisions. And Adam was convinced to override that decision and put season one of The Walking Dead on here.
Easily, by the way. Like in hindsight, no problem.
Well, in hindsight, it's interesting because over the course of this conversation and this most recent playthrough, as I said, I have felt the slight annoyance of wanting, like watching your kid do something and they're kind of succeeding, but you're like, go harder, further. You could do better, buddy. Like I now have my expectation bar is rising for these types of games, especially as we're getting more of them like True Colors and whatever, The Quarry, et cetera, other games we mentioned.
Yeah, there strange are other. What is that one called? Strange.
Strange.
Life is Strange.
Days? Life is strange. Thank you. My point is, other companies, Telltale used to be it for this.
Right.
Other companies are throwing their hats into the ring.
Right.
And I could foresee a day where there's a better visual novel that I would put on the drive. I do think visual novel game is a thing that deserves to be on the drive.
Agreed.
I'm just talking through my thought process. Sorry. So I'll wrap it up.
No, no.
Well, so the decision for me comes down to, is a thing that climaxes in an ending that made you like cry and shut the game down and stare into space and think for an hour. But the rest of the game is like, good. It's good. People live, people die. You fight zombies or whatever. Is that better or worse than a game where you're like, this is executed really well the whole time, but I never reached that same level of emotional high? Really, am I a thinky or a heart? Am I going to lead with my brain or my heart, I think?
Mm.
Oi.
I knew it was going to be hard. I knew this was hard for you.
It's really hard. And you know what? Because I actually don't think The Walking Dead held up as well. Like season 2 and 3 or whatever.
Oh,
were fine.
That's interesting.
Not as good as 1, though.
No, I've played every one of those Walking Dead games, so that you know that. All of them.
I could be wrong.
I've liked
this
them
could
all,
be a
by
decision
the way.
That I disagree with later, but I'll say this. I think I'm going to land on delete.
Oh!
The reasons are... I might be totally wrong, though, because Telltale has changed hands. So, like, for all I know, Wolf Among Us 2 will fucking suck. But I am cautiously, optimistically leaving this slot open for Wolf Among Us 2 to potentially push the genre further in a way where I go, ah, yes, this is the one I've been waiting for, this one. So, like, I'm not saying that Walking Dead season 1's better than Wolf Among Us as much as I am like, I can't change the past. Walking Dead season 1's on the drive. Let's not consider that. Wolf Among Us, I thought it was good, but I think the genre can go further, and I think we are going to get a better installment in this genre later.
Wow.
Wow. But I'm torn up about that decision because that means I'm not letting the past affect me, but I am letting the future affect
me. This is a hard one, man. Yeah.
It's much like a noir. It's like, there's a lot of ins, a lot of outs, speaking of Lebowski. But, God, I guess I'm going to delete it. I the other thing is, I feel safer deleting. Like, if I can't decide, delete is safer than a keep, right?
I think so, too. I think it's better to delete than to keep, because keeping is really important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Buddy, you said exactly how I felt about it. okay. I think that's why I made you go first, because I wanted to know... I didn't want to influence your decision, but to me it comes down to, look, this is a video game podcast, and the game experience of Walking Dead is a little better than this. I prefer the story and characters here. I think they're better. I prefer the world here. I think it's better. I think Walking Dead adapts in a more satisfying way for a game.
In fact, you're right.
This format
portions are more fun.
They're more fun. They're more fun, and also the narrative experience that you're supposed to get from being able to choose your choice in response or action, it's better in Walking Dead season 1. Is Walking Dead overplayed as a concept? 100%. Do I like the comics as much as Fables? No, but I do like the comics.
Yeah, they're
fine. Yeah, I liked them a lot at first, you know. So like,
oh,
and I liked
there's
the
just
show
too much
too.
Of it. Like,
yeah,
the show was also good, but it didn't need to go that long.
Agreed. That's how I feel about it. You know. So it's not. I'm not here to disparage Walking Dead so much as to say like this first iteration of it as an adaptation was a home run, and this is a really, really, really good game. And but I don't think we should have two of them on the drive. And I think that we'd be doing the wrong thing historically if we said that it was better than Walking Dead season 1. So because of that, I'm going to delete it with a heavy sigh, because I dramatically prefer this game to that.
That's what's weird is I feel like we're in a place where I'm deleting it on a, like, I'm technically deleting it, but for the record,
I
do think
it.
It's a better game.
I like it better
than the one we kept. But
it's a better story, not a better game. It's a better story and a better world.
Right,
prefer
better written story. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's all I mean.
With characters that are awesome, So I don't know. So those of you who are listening to this to either celebrate a game you already love or to discover a game you haven't played that you might love, if you like any of the Telltales at all, if you like any of them, you're going to like this. I think this is a really good game.
Yeah. Circling around, yeah.
And you may feel like you guys are fools. This is really just about which is the best story, and you should have kept this because it's the best story. I understand that point of view. That's the one that I was tinkering with in my brain for the last hour before we made this decision. But again, video games are not only story. They're not even necessarily primarily story, though some are. They're about interactivity and the meaningfulness of choice. And I think the first season of Walking Dead is the best at that we've seen from this genre.
Deleted. Try harder, Bigby. You can do it. We believe in you. You'll get there, buddy.
Yeah. So, sorry, buddy.
The ones I haven't played are, like, I really, like, Minecraft story mode I never played because I'm like, what could that possibly be?
Not interested. Not interested in that.
But I heard even the Borderlands one was pretty
good. It is good.
I think Telltale do know what they're doing.
It's good. The first Tales from the Borderlands, we're getting a sequel to it in, like, minutes.
But it depends on the world. Like, there was a Guardian of the Galaxy one, too. And I tried to play through that, and I just don't care about those characters. So I was like, this is boring to me because I'm not invested in this story generally.
I never played one that was bad. I've never played one of these Telltales.
And I feel like, how could I invest in Minecraft? How could I invest in characters in the Minecraft universe?
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
I never played.
Someone write us if the fucking Minecraft story mode thing rules. Someone please let me know.
I mean, but are you going to play it? If somebody's like, it's the best game ever, bro, you're missing out. Are you going to play it?
Then I would. Yeah, right, yeah. Okay. I take advice that seriously.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Somebody tell him it's the best game ever so he can see if he wants to play
it. Waste his time.
Yeah. Just let him blow 20 hours on Minecraft's narrative. They're all good, though, man. Like, even the Batman, the first Batman that they released, because there's been two. Even that one was pretty good. Like, it's not as good as a Batman movie, but pretty good, you know? So I don't know. Great genre. It's sad that this company is not intact in the way that they were when they were releasing these. I love these games.
Agree. I want some more true point and clicks on here. We'll get some someday.
You keep shooting them at me and I'll keep batting them down.
We'll have to cover Sam and Max Hit the Road someday.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it'll take you like 5 hours, dude. It's nothing.
It's not laziness. I'm willing to put in the work.
It's lack of interest.
It's lack of liking it.
Yeah. Work complete.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah.
wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Zero Foxtrot isn't just a brand, it's a way of life. Founded and operated by veterans, Zero Foxtrot's unique apparel and gear echoes the grit of the warrior culture. Zero Foxtrot dedicates itself to producing content, honoring the sacrifices of forgotten heroes of the past, and connecting history to the present. Embark on a journey with Zero Foxtrot today at ZeroFoxtrot.com. It's not merely our products. It's about the ethos that we embody. Rugged, resilient, and timeless.